I don't know why. I always kind of like the TIE bomber look, I guess.
Yeah. It's asynchronous. I mean, asymmetrical.
It is, but it is and it isn't at the same time. I mean, it's, you know, taken as kind of a in general shape, it's symmetrical.
Right, but when you look closer, it's like, oh, each pod has a different function.
Yeah.
There's like a pilot pod and a bombing pod.
Yeah, but it's got the cool
bent panels, yeah.
Yeah. I never liked the original, the stupid just straight up and down panels on your basic TIE
fighter. On your standard run-of-the-mill TIE. Yeah. Rebels has a really cool three-winged TIE. It's very sleek, very maneuverable.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's pretty, like, it's the bane of their existence, basically.
Oh, wow.
And then it's like, why isn't this in any of the original
My favorite, movies? Okay, my favorite Star Wars vehicle was always the Y-Wing. And it,
really?
I just thought it was a cool...
We've talked about this, yeah.
We probably have.
It was, and Y-Wings are their bombers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they've got like a turret or one or two turrets on them. And I guess they make really good targets.
Yeah, they get blown up a lot. I think over time, mine has become the B-Wing. And I thought the B-Wing was stupid as shit. And you barely see it in the movies. But they did an episode of Rebels on it. And I realized that it's like it's a suborbital capability. So it can actually, unlike X-Wings in Force Awakens, J.J. Mm-hmm. Abrams, motherfucker, B-Wings can actually fight, like, dogfight in lower, or higher gravity, I should say. So they're actually more versatile. And they're kind of weird looking, because you pilot them at the top and then all the way in the bottom of this very vertical ship as, like, a gun turret.
Okay.
Yeah, they're funky.
Ooh, excuse me.
Hi, we are Buddies in Space. the dying man over there is...
That's Michael Smith, and... And the less dying man next to me is...
With the softer voice is M. Michael Carassi.
I still got a little... I'm glad we edited all that out. Because nobody wants to listen to that.
Yeah, it, yeah. This drink needs something.
It does?
Yeah, it's way too syrupy and sweet for me.
Okay. Mine isn't that bad. I'm liking it. It's got the syrupy stuff, but it's got enough...
It might be the Ungava, because that's kind of got its own thing anyway.
All right.
I have bitter lemon upstairs. I think it's going to go pretty well with this. So
okay.
I'm going to go pause really quick.
Do you want to sample this one? Just to...
Yeah.
I'm curious about the Ungava.
Yeah, yeah. It's cloying. It's too cloying for me.
Oh, yeah. This is a lot better.
A lot more drinkable. Yeah, do you see what I mean? This is like cloying. Yeah, I think this needs tonic. I'll be right back.
Okay.
Do you want to leave it recording and you fill the space, or you want me to pause it?
No, let's pause it.
Okay. Yeah, so...
All right, so are we on?
Yep, we're on.
All right, so we've already hit a snag with a drink, so... what I brought in is a mixer that I found in South Carolina.
Which is cool.
Trip. It's a blackberry and spice mixer, which is made with... It is blackberry juice. So it is actual, you know, it's not like... sugar stuff, but it is very sweet.
Yeah, very very sweet. Even for simple syrup, it's like whoa.
And what you have brought in is a little. I'll have some of that. Mm-hmm. Whoa, is a Fever Tree bitter lemon tonic,
which I can drink all day long.
It doesn't say tonic, but it says
it is tonic.
Quinine or quinine, yeah. Or however you pronounce that.
Quinine.
Which is tonic.
Which is tonic, yeah. Also fought mosquitoes. Which is why, no, that's why they drank tonic.
Mm-hmm.
It was for the quinine.
Because
it fights malaria, or it's supposed to, anyway.
Supposed to. I don't know.
I don't know how much quinine it takes compared to how much they were drinking, but they were probably sauce, the British Army.
So yeah, that's nice. It cuts down the sweetness a little bit. Very, very, very nice. I like this.
Yeah. Yours was better initially, but I think this drink needed the bitter lemon.
Yeah, because you went with the Ungava.
Which is pretty flavorful gin to begin with.
Yeah, it's got its own kind of sweetness to it.
I'm finding that Ungava does not mix with interesting mixers. Ungava mixes great with, like,
just
tonic.
Straight tonic, yeah.
And it's, like, probably my favorite gin and tonic other than Hendrix. But, yeah, trying to mix with something like this, I should have known better. It was too much.
That's right. The Hendrix is probably great with this.
It is, actually. I had a special
with
drink.
This, with this mixer, I mean.
Oh, maybe.
Because the cucumber would probably offset a little bit of the sweetness.
Can always try it sometime.
All right. And I went with the Akori gin, which is the Japanese-style gin made in Spain.
It's Japanish.
And I think this is quite nice.
Mm. Yeah, it was definitely more drinkable on its own. So do you have a name for this drink?
No, I mean, it's just... okay, I guess we made it our own now. You've added the
third ingredient touch. Is that the rule? Like once there's three ingredients, you can name it.
Yeah,
two ingredients and it's a blank and blank.
Yeah,
that's good. It's a good rule.
Sure, yeah. It's just a mixer. Right. I mean, I think there was a name for the drink, the mixer plus the gin. I think there was actually a name for it on the bottle of the mixer.
Mm-hmm.
But screw that. You've added you've transformed it with your bitter lemon, so you get to name it.
Bitter blackberry.
There we go.
Bam.
A little boring, but sure.
Yeah. Well, they can't all be
black
dead
bitterberry.
Black bitterberry. Blackberry. Wait, that's what it is. Never mind. Black bitter.
I like black bitterberry.
Bitter and black.
Bitter and black.
I feel like that doesn't create the proper expectation for this drink.
Blemony berry.
Snicket.
Blemony snicket.
Blemony snicket.
Blemony snicket. Love it.
All right, I'll drink to that.
Yeah, Blemony snicket.
That is a true improvisational team effort to name a drink right there.
Digging it.
Mm-hmm. So, really quick, just to get this out of the way.
You've got a gigantic thing on your
big
wrist.
Big honking wrist pewter.
I mean, yep. It's crazy big.
Yeah, it's...
It's like you put a blackberry on your wrist.
Well, a white berry, I like to think.
A white blackberry.
So just really quick, because I've talked about this so much.
Okay.
Recently Spotify hired someone to produce hardware. So suddenly it becomes very obvious that they're going to produce some kind of device, and that's why they won't let anyone do offline Spotify.
Okay.
Tizen was supposed to get it a couple months ago and never happened. They changed their minds.
Oh, so they're like, we're not going to do that anymore.
Yeah, they're going to have a killer app. Everyone wants offline Spotify who pays for premium and you can't get it on a smartwatch. So they're like, oh, you can only get it if you buy ours. So I was holding out for the incredibly expensive Garmin Fenix 5S. Tiny ladies size, 42mm, sapphire glass, like super impact resistant, great for everything outdoors. Seemed like a really good investment for a long-term smartwatch.
Okay.
And I was saving up and saving up, and I get a stipend from work for a smartwatch or some kind of fitness-related thing.
Oh, cool.
So I was just banking all my points. And then the other day, I read, and they're like, oh, by the way, this has 64 megabytes of on-board storage.
64
megabytes.
Megabytes?
Megabytes.
That's like...
Nothing.
Yeah.
You can barely fit apps with that.
That's like 20 years ago.
Whoa, this will never fill up. Yeah, all of my 2 kilobyte pictures.
My Mac Plus has a 30 meg hard drive. I don't think I'll ever use all that. Jeez.
Still won't, because it doesn't start. So I got pissed, and I'm like, all right, I'm tired of waiting for Spotify. I'm tired of waiting for phone or for smartwatches that don't do what I want. Let me get an activity tracker, no matter how hideous it is. I knew it wasn't going to be good looking, but
it's not.
But it's a Polar activity tracker first and foremost, and smartwatch second.
Okay.
So, and you know what? I went out for a run today. I was watching my heart rate. It perfectly mapped my GPS for me and gave me the exact, like, it was 3.73 miles, and it drew that out exactly right on Google Maps.
Okay, so this is like basically a Fitbit on steroids.
Well, Polar is a better Fitbit to begin with. This is the only smartwatch they make, and they, you know, so I bought into the Polar, you know, and the I used to have a Fitbit. So the Polar Flow app on my phone, like, gave me so much cool information about my run. And I was like, you know what? I don't know if I'm really not convinced I'm going to wear this all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I work from home.
Right.
I'm not in meetings where I need to sneak a glance at a text. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I'm trying it out. But yeah, I went for a run. Bluetooth headphones, no wires. This thing weighs way less than any other smartwatch I've tried. And I can always swap out the band for something a little smaller. I just got it yesterday.
It looks like it, you know, weighs as much as a small dog. But
yeah, no, it's probably all, much lighter. It's all that. It's like the Fitbit. Well, I mean, I'll show you. It pops out, right? It's not a traditional. It's like the Fitbit.
Oh, okay.
So it's like that. So the actual hardware is just sitting inside a housing.
All right.
Which is how the Fitbit was too. The Fitbit itself.
So you can like put different colored straps on it or whatever.
Yeah, I could probably get smaller ones too. So, you know, I'm just trying it out for now, and I don't want to train. But it's really
it's not that heavy.
No, it's not. It looks big. Right, I mean, it looks big on my wrist, especially. But I found the heart rate to be really pretty good, you know?
Well, there you go.
So it does everything I want, and it's free. Because I saved up so many points, plus my work stipend, I pay nothing. And then when Spotify releases a killer smartwatch, maybe I'll consider it next year. So that's my story, and I'm sticking with it.
All right. That's our nerd porn for the day.
Nerd porn. Okay, so I told you I had an idea for this episode.
You did.
And I think you'll like it, but I want to give you some backstory.
Uh-oh. Exposition?
Exposition time! It is a time of civil unrest.
In a world.
In a world. So...
Where Fitbits rule.
They really don't. They're not doing well at all. They're not going to get their smart... Their smartwatch was fundamentally flawed, so it couldn't roll out in time. The antenna for GPS was put in the wrong spot and it couldn't connect. Did you hear about that?
No. That's when they just want to ditch the feature. We don't do
GPS. Yeah, but Fitbit needs GPS. Yeah. I mean, for activity tracking, you need GPS.
That's true.
It's pretty integral. I mean, it was really cool having it. So Erica went away for 5 days. She just got back yesterday.
So you're like, party! Not really. I know.
No, it was 3 days solid Simon time.
Yes.
2 days honey-do list.
Uh-huh.
Which is my vacation. Because for me, being active, not working, spending time with my son, and getting shit done that is going to bother me if it doesn't get done, like patching a hole in the concrete,
mm-hmm.
and all this shit, that's my vacation. So right.
Well, that's sad, but I'm happy that you
I'm such an active person. I don't lounge well, you know? Being on a cruise, being drunk was okay, but having a kid, it would never work. But Erica's like, you're going to watch a movie while I'm gone, something terrible that I wouldn't like. And so I ended up watching Assassin's Creed.
Oh, man. All right. Dig in.
So,
because we just watched, Melinda and I just watched Alien Covenant.
Oh, you saw it?
So, man. And it was funny because throughout most of the movie, well, not most of it, a good portion of the movie, Fassbender, at least one of Fassbender's characters had on a hood.
Really?
Just like the Assassin's Creed hood.
That's weird.
Yeah, I think it's in his contracts now. Must wear hood for at least 50% of my scenes or something.
There was a funny review of Assassin's Creed that said, it seems as if Fassbender was so jealous of Hugh Jackman's Wolverine character that he insisted on being shirtless for half of Assassin's Creed and growling a lot. I was like, because I read that during the movie, because I got bored and was reading reviews.
That's not a good sign.
No, it was not a good sign. So, and this is gonna lead to the theme of the episode.
Okay.
Because I'm having a revelatory experience playing Horizon Zero Dawn.
Okay.
So, if you kind of get a sense where this is going. So,
We're talking about video games now. Well, we're going to.
We're talking about Assassin's Creed the movie versus Assassin's Creed the video game.
Okay.
That's gonna bleed
we're
into
gonna, we're new video else. Games. Vidya games.
Kind of.
Vidya games.
Let me fucking get to it.
All right. That's cool, because I got No Man's Sky stuff that I want to talk about.
Well, yeah, and that's why I want your... Because we have very different perspectives on this. That's why I think it's going to be an interesting conversation.
Yeah.
But we need to actually start the conversation. Assassin's Creed is not a horrible movie, right? It is horribly CG dependent.
Uh-huh.
But that's not good.
No.
Very boring. The games, of which there are many, and they're very up and down in terms of quality,
mm-hmm.
are... praised, at least early on, for their historical accuracy in a video game.
Okay.
And I can attest to this in so much as I went to Venice and knew exactly where to go on our honeymoon for the entire time we were in Venice because of Assassin's Creed 2.
Because the map was...
Right, because Venice hasn't changed in 400 years. So is it historical accuracy or is it just their geography?
All right. Some of the historical accuracy in the games... Which one was the game that, supposedly took real... deaths of people and incorporated that.
Might have been
you know what I'm talking about?
Brotherhood or 3. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
So it would show you the name of the actual person who died at that time. And
yeah.
It was trying to... It was so gimmicky.
Well, it's Ubisoft. Ubisoft is super gimmicky. And the games have gotten bloated over time. That's why I don't play them anymore. They're like, you need to do these 500 fetch quests. Oh, Ben Franklin lost his notes. Go help him find them. It's like, what? Fuck off, man. I like Ben, but this is stupid.
Yeah. But the gimmick, and just to clarify this for people, mm-hmm. What are they talking about? So you would kill somebody, and then it would I think, show you the name of the person or something.
Well, you always knew who you were killing.
Okay.
I mean, that wasn't like a surprise.
But they try to tie it in so that when you killed somebody, it would be like somebody who actually died in that time period.
Sure. Okay. I think they might have done that throughout.
Oh, okay.
Except they did one alternate reality thing, the tyranny of George Washington, where he becomes king. It's like an alternate reality. Which, that wasn't the worst one, the Native American one. That game, like, it was super corporate, the game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so you could tell from the minute you started playing it, like, there is something wrong with this game. And it was, like, made by committee. Like, where can we sell the most DLC content in this game? Chapter 1. Anyway, the movie Assassin's Creed tried to do roughly the overall plot of the first four games.
Mm-hmm.
That is, at bare minimum, rushing through, doing nothing extra, about 100 hours of gameplay.
So, and this is kind of like, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I honestly have not played any of the games, because I didn't really, I don't know, none of them
you're
really
not a,
spoke to me.
Well, you're not a narrative game kind of guy.
Kind of, you're but not all the time.
You're not. You're wrong. You're
so,
not.
So, fine. I'm not. Whatever.
List the last five games you played.
No.
Because you'll lose this argument.
Because I'm still playing Borderlands 2, so shut up.
That's the only exception you're going to come up with. Because Diablo does not count. Go on. No.
So, what the hell was I talking about?
Who cares? Anyway. So,
no, you say something. I'll remember what I was
going to
say.
You were going to say, supposedly it was Assassin's Creed, blank. This is as far as you got.
So it's like 12 Monkeys, but with a lot more murdering, right?
What?
In the movie 12 Monkeys.
No.
No? No. They send the guy back in
time. Nope.
No?
Okay. So you really don't know what Assassin's Creed is.
I guess not.
So the movie did this aspect exactly the same as the games. So, and it again, this is ridiculous. It's sci-fi. Before Assassin's Creed, the game came out, people noticed that there was this weird thing in the preview videos where when you died, things got digitalized.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone was like, why does this suddenly feel like the Matrix? The plot of Assassin's Creed, again, not saying this makes sense,
uh-huh.
is that there is this thing called the Animus. Mm-hmm. And what it does is it allows these scientists, who are bad, mm-hmm. to access the genetic memories of a person. So they grab assassins, modern-day assassins, or people descended from assassins, who are the good guys, by the way. Oh, mm-hmm. it's reversed. And access their genetic memories of their ancestors who had access to this really advanced technology from another world. Again, crazy batshit bananas.
Okay. Storyline.
So what you're talking about is not someone traveling in time, but a modern-day person reliving through their genetic memories, and I'm doing air quotes, their ancestors. So mm-hmm. that's the cheat. So whenever you die, you just come back to the present and then go back in.
To a different ancestor?
No, you keep going back until you finish the story.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, but then you finish the plot. Basically, all they cared about, the scientists, are like, okay, we need to know this piece of information. You got there. Okay, next ancestor. And that was basically it.
So the person going back in time, or going back into their
memories,
DNA.
Their DNA, yeah.
Isn't really changing anything in the past.
No, they can't. They're very clear in the movie and the game. Like, you can't, you can try. The game will be like, your ancestor didn't do this. You can't do this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you'll hit walls. Like, nope, they didn't leave the city during this time, so you can't. So it's like, kind of like, all right, well, it's sort of time bendy. I get it.
It seems a little bullshitty, but okay.
Well, it's a really great way to put walls up around to contain your open environment. It's an open world, just don't go outside of it. It's a very contained open world.
Option I wouldn't do this. No, you didn't do
nope,
that.
Nope, you didn't do that.
You didn't do that.
Your
no.
your great 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 grandfather didn't do that, so you clearly can't do that. I mean, come on. Anyway, I really want to get past this. So the movie in 2 hours and 20 minutes tried to do roughly 100 hours worth of gameplay.
Yes.
Right? Now, Ubisoft pads the fuck out of those games. Mm-hmm. So it could have been probably 20 hours for four games. But, and it fails pretty much in every level. The movie.
Oh, the movie. Okay.
Yeah, the movie. The game, I love the first four games. I love the storyline of those games. I do. Because if you take out all the fluff, there's a really cool story.
All right.
And it's Italy.
I'll buy that.
I love Italy. So they picked a similar character in the modern day, in the game, in the movie. And they picked a similar situation. Actually, the same situation with a different ancestor.
Mm-hmm.
So they were like trying to pick and choose, you know, movie by committee, right? It's like, oh, let's take the elements that we can easily make into a game that will sell toys, or mm-hmm. a movie that will sell toys. And it fails. It's too much CG. I forget his name. The guy who played Omar in The Wire, who's an outstanding actor, was really interesting in the movie, you got no backstory. I mean, it's not even like two-dimensional characters. Like, there's just no time. And there was like a lot of that. And it's like, what the fuck is going on in this movie? Like, I've played the games. I understand what's happening in this movie. What the fuck is happening in this movie? And Marion Cotillard's in it. Guess what? She's bad. You know that really early. Because that's what Erica said. She goes, oh, Marion Cotillard's in it? Is she bad? She just hates her. Jeremy Irons, Marion Cotillard, Fassbender, Brendan Gleeson. Like, there was a really good cast. And Jeremy Irons is just phoning it in. Like, because why wouldn't you? I mean, I'm sure you got a good paycheck to
Jeremy
just...
Jeremy Irons, you're like... You just want me to be Jeremy Irons, don't you?
They yes, paid him yes, we do. Probably a few million to be Jeremy Irons. And, like, I was giggling because, like, at the end he's walking with this alien technology and he's, like, holding it so, like, Jeremy Irons, like, he's holding it aloft and it's doing something to alter the world. And it just looks so stupid. Because you can tell he's just holding a prop and all the CG was added later. It mm-hmm. just did nothing about it worked. So, okay. The movie
Okay, Jeremy, so you're holding this magical piece of alien technology... And it's changing the world around you. And he's just like, okay.
Well, he's very, very proper with its holding. I don't know. He has very
So I don't want to drop it, is what you're saying.
So I need to hold it aloft and imbue it with an enormous amount of importance in my life. Yes. All right. Behold. Cut. All right. Where's my fucking paycheck? And give me some gin. Some Japanish gin.
Yes. This is good, man. I like this.
You finished?
I would use less of that blackberry stuff.
It's really strong.
It's good, but yeah, it's too strong. A little bit goes a long way.
You drank your drink in a record amount of time. Do you want another one?
Delicious.
Or do you want just
no,
some bitter, do you want some bitter
I think
lemon?
That would be a bad idea.
Here, have some of this. Just drink it on its own.
It's good.
Well, to a glass, otherwise it'll go flat.
What?
You don't know about this trick? Just say you pour soda so it doesn't go flat. It's a bartender trick.
Oh, you're pouring like a beer.
Well, that's why you pour a beer like that.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. So Assassin's Creed, the movie, fails in pretty much every way. And even as a game fan, actually, I think especially as a fan of the game, it fails. Because it utterly fails to capture what made the game good.
Did it make you want to go out and play the next game?
No.
Okay, then that's a big fail. Because that's really, you know, the whole point of it, I would think.
To sell
more games.
Yeah, right? I mean, and Ubisoft's name's right in the production company credit, so clearly they wanted to do that. But it really is not. Despite everything, all the budget... And the fancy CG and the cast, it just doesn't work.
Okay.
And this got me thinking.
Oh, okay.
So I'm playing Horizon Zero Dawn, and it's thinking. I know it's dangerous.
It is dangerous.
But I'm rested and not drunk. So it's okay.
Horizon Zero Dawn. Let's take a step back.
Yeah.
This is like one of the hottest games for the PS4.
PS4 only. It's a Cinderella story too.
Because it was, nobody thought it would be a big hit?
Because no one trusted the people who made it.
Oh, okay.
Guerrilla Games is only known for Killzone, which is a fast-paced first-person shooter.
Yes.
Which has actually got a decent plot for a first-person shooter, but it's a first-person shooter. Mm-hmm. And they were like, hey, Sony, we want to make an open-world game. And Sony's like, all right. And then they made, like, this brilliant game. Witcher 3 does open-world better. And bigger.
Okay.
But Horizon Zero Dawn, the premise is, it grips you from the start. It's post-apocalyptic. Mm-hmm. Mankind has been reduced to tribes. The world is populated by robots.
And I've heard, the one thing I've heard a lot about this game is that the character, especially the main character, is a very engaging character.
She is outstanding, which is definitely going to lead into this whole half of the podcast now, the way we keep talking.
Okay.
But this checks a lot of boxes for me. I had just come off of Tomb Raider or Rise of the Tomb Raider, which I also really liked. And they've come a long way since the original Tomb Raider games.
Mm-hmm.
The character of Lara Croft is like likable and believable. She still has a large chest. I don't think they can get rid of that. But
another video game series that had a couple of bad movies.
That's
like,
true.
Awful,
all of them.
Yeah, awful
like
movies.
Two, maybe three. And a lot of bad games.
Yeah.
It just sort of, I mean, you could argue they're all bad, but it did sort of reinvigorate the genre. Anyway, so I come off of that, and I really like that game. It's got a strong plot. It's fun. It's got a cool, like, I really like strong female
protagonists. So we're talking about Horizon now.
I'm talking about Tomb Raider.
Okay.
So right before Horizon, I beat Rise of the Tomb Raider, And there's like check boxes. Like, I like a strong female protagonist.
Okay.
She's a little cliche, Lara Croft, because she comes with the baggage of all the years of Tomb Raider games. So I wasn't sure how I was going to feel about Horizon Zero Dawn. I had a lot of hype. It's got an incredibly engaging main character. Strong female lead. Also uses a bow, because apparently all female leads need to use a bow and arrow, because that's a thing with video games.
And movies and books.
And yeah, it's pretty much, yeah, the Hunger Games on up. I don't know. It's funny, yeah. It's funny you mentioned that. Very well voice acted. Smart. Like, not Lara Croft smart, which gets annoying at times, because she's sort of too smart. It's like, oh, I happen to know exactly what time period you're talking about and all the idiosyncrasies of it that allow me to, you know, solve this puzzle.
So more clever than...
Like, clever. So, great example. She's talking to a character. So, this is post-apocalyptic. Mankind is living in
tribes. We're talking about Horizon.
Horizon now. We have fully moved into Horizon. I love this line. It stuck out to me so much. She's talking to a character who knows a lot, who's voiced by... did you watch Fringe?
Like, one or two episodes.
Remember her boss?
I didn't get into it.
The really tall, skinny African-American actor?
Sort of.
He's got a really good voice.
Yeah.
He's in a lot of stuff. He was in John Wick, too, but I didn't see it.
Okay.
So he's voicing this guy who's, like, kind of helping her.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of what happened to the world, right? Because it is our future.
Okay.
And at one point...
A lot of exposition from this character.
No.
No?
That's, not really. That's what's amazing about this game.
Okay.
The narrative structure of this game is perfect. You want to know what happened. Why... You can see ruins that are recognizable from our world. You know it's about 300 years in the future. These robots that look like horses and giant chickens and shit that want to kill everyone are really good at it.
Giant chickens that want to kill everyone. Giant robot chickens that want to kill everyone.
Giant robot chickens.
I'm in.
It's pretty terrifying.
I now have to go buy this game because sold me with that one
giant robot
collection
chickens,
of words.
Giant robot brontosauruses.
No, just
chickens.
Giant robot chickens that want to kill everyone.
Mel will love this game.
Yeah.
So why is the world pop? You know what is going on here?
Wow.
So you discover a lot more. I thought that they kind of drag it out into other games, but they like basically tell you everything, but in the perfect amount of time. But there's a point where you come across a holographic projection of a globe.
Okay.
And.
Never seen one of those before.
Well, Wow. Exactly, right? So the character who, again, grew up as an outcast, has an awesome backstory to her. So she looks at this and she goes, what is this? And the other character's like, this is the globe. Hey, big surprise, the world isn't flat like you thought. And she goes, why would I think that? During an eclipse, the shadow's round. I'm not stupid. And I was just like, that was amazing. Like, yeah, fuck you, dude. Like, everything about it was just the character to a T. It was awesome. So this game... makes you want to know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Makes you want to explore in a way that most games don't. Like, to search every nook and cranny, all the collectibles. Like, I don't get sucked into that very often. We've talked about this.
Mm-hmm.
But this game, I've done everything I can. Because the story...
You're not usually a completionist.
I'm not a completionist, but this game has made me one. Because... Because
you just want to, like, rush through the story, usually.
No, I want to only experience the story and not get distracted.
Okay, that's what I mean, though.
Okay.
If it's a quest game... You're just like, I'm just going to go through the story quest.
I don't want to do the fetch quests and all this other stupid. I don't want to collect 20 feathers to unlock of nothing that I'm not going to use.
Because I'll get a weapon and it'll be good for one fight and then I'll find something better anyway. Right.
Well, now you're just describing grinding, but.
Yes, I am.
This is my world, not yours. But this rewards you. Like, there are heartfelt letters where you get like two different sides of a story and like one person knows what's happening in the past and one person doesn't. And it's like heartrending because like one person, they have to lie to the other. Like it's brilliant the way they're telling the story.
Okay.
Kind of like how like BioShock did it. Like not many games get this right where like the exposition and narrative between the main characters is great. But all the environmental stuff that if you work, you find adds so much more. And actually adds to your understanding what's happening. Okay. So, all that being said, I'm finding this to be one of the best games I've ever played.
Okay. Good.
In a very short list, right? And it's not Witcher 3. They are different games. Everyone keeps comparing them, but they're really not. because they're both open world and they play similarly. But this does narrative open world way better than Witcher did. And that's saying a lot because Witcher is pretty amazing. This would make a terrible movie. So, here's where I tie all this together.
Okay.
So, I want to have a friendly debate or a gang obsession with you. I don't know which way you're going to fall on this.
I don't know.
But I
maybe I'll just agree with you. And
well, that's the thing.
Blow
yeah.
your
but
whole
I don't
plan.
Think I don't think it will.
And then we can talk about Alien Covenant.
Well, I still want to. But here's what I'm proposing. We have reached a point in the video game art form, in the medium of video game storytelling, that it is superior to a movie of the same plot. Case in point, Assassin's Creed. Case in point, most video game movies. Case in point, why are we still making movies based on narrative-based games when the game is better? Uncharted, if they ever make it, will be a terrible movie because the game is better. Right? This is a big thing. So here's where I want to go with this. It's not just that. What is the best medium for storytelling? That's what I want to discuss. And I'm going to narrow the field down. We're not going to do radio plays because that doesn't really speak to either of us.
All right.
But I'm going to say books, comic books, TV, movies, and video games. Five.
Okay.
And I'd like to pit them against each other. But the reason I thought this would be interesting for you is you do not play narrative games. Your favorite game... No, just hear me out. At least lately, the games you've been playing primarily are a game with no plot whatsoever. Right? Which is one of your favorite games.
Okay.
It's all about exploration.
I don't even know which one you're talking about.
No Man's Sky. Sure. But yeah, I'm just grabbing something. No Man's Sky. Borderlands 2 does have a plot, but that's the exception to the rule.
Diablo's... Not when I'm playing it through for like the fifth or sixth time.
Well, it's also grindy, and you love grinding, which it, like for those who don't know, is like... Describe grinding. I don't know. You describe
it. It's like panning for gold, basically.
Yeah, there you go. It's over like... and over. And better pieces of gold.
Yes, exactly.
I'm going to spend this piece of gold to get a slightly infinitesimally better piece of gold.
That's
and
it.
Then do it again.
That's what it is.
Because it speaks to something in your brain.
Yeah.
And you don't need a plot because it's satisfying your enjoyment.
Yes.
Right. Diablo, grindy game. No Man's Sky. So we definitely have different interests in our games. I mean, our game interests don't actually overlap that much. Borderlands is an exception.
Yeah, but there's definitely some overlap. I have played more narrative games in the past, and when I do, you know, I get into them and I get super involved in them. I just haven't gotten into it lately. Horizon sounds like something I'd really enjoy.
I will be happy to lend it to you. I think it's brilliant.
I keep getting into situations like I was so excited for The Last Guardian, and then I played like maybe 3 hours of it, and I'm like, fuck this game.
Did you gave up on it?
I just stopped. I mean, it's like still there, and I still want to finish it, but the controls are so fucking god-awful and obnoxious, and they get in the way of appreciating just the story of it.
Not unlike when a movie is badly edited.
Okay.
Right?
It takes you out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so framing all that, I thought this would be an interesting discussion.
And going back, I think both of us have... we both tremendously enjoyed Shadow of the Colossus.
Which has essentially no plot.
But it does and it doesn't. And there's a story there, but it's not...
A spoon
expounded
fed.
Upon.
Yeah.
It's kind of, these things are happening, and the game isn't going to explain why.
It is an experiential narrative.
Yes, but we both really like that.
That is true. And that's actually what Horizon does. It's more plotty, but it is an experiential narrative.
Okay.
Which I think is, I'm becoming aware recently, is my favorite thing in a game. Mm-hmm. Is, oh, there's a good plot, and I'm going to, if I do a little bit of work, I'm going to learn what that plot is.
Mm-hmm.
But, okay, so take a step back and think about this, because I did not give you a heads up on this, right? I didn't let you prepare. I have prepared. I have a massive diatribe. But I'm not going to do it because that wouldn't be fair to you. But there are absolutely pros and cons to be made for the experience of reading a book. And this is an old argument, but books versus comics, because they are not the same thing. And there are some things that comics do very well that books can't.
Right.
Television is a whole nother genre or a whole nother medium, obviously, versus movies, because I think they tend to be something you want to pair against each other. But I think that TVs and movies both have their pros and cons. And then I'm saying that video games are another thing that needs to be weighed. And like you said, bad controls, bad voice. There's all sorts of things that can derail the enjoyment of a video game.
Yes.
But what I am wondering and what I want to argue and discuss with you for the remainder of this podcast is... What is, if you had a pick, you Smike, not you Mankind.
Right.
You as Smike, what is the, of those five that I listed, what is the best medium for an engaging story?
For me.
So you're going to jump right in. You don't want to, you're going to go right to what you think it is. You don't want to talk them out. That's fine.
No, I can talk them out. I'll throw down the first and most glaring problem with video games. And this is taking video games in general as a whole, as, you know, what typically happens in video games.
Okay.
Is you have about 30 minutes to an hour worth of story that is broken up
and padded
out, and it's basically you have to do all of these things that are not story,
mm-hmm,
in order to get the next part of story.
Okay.
And that's,
so it's an point A to point B. Reward is more story.
Yes. You're basically working through a thing, a game engine that is designed to take up time in between getting you from chapter to chapter in the story, from very brief chapter to chapter in the story. And I know I'm not describing all video games, but I am describing the vast majority of games that have any sort of story to them.
But yeah, we're removing fighting games and sports games. Okay, well, point and counterpoint to that, doesn't that add to the experiential factor of it? Doesn't that engage you more, the investment of time and the feeling of work and accomplishment? I mean, to speak as a trainer,
mm-hmm,
I've done a lot of research into gamification,
mm-hmm,
and there is an overwhelming, and again, I'm not saying I'm right or wrong, I'm just countering your point. There is an overwhelming amount of, we know now, research and evidence that the game concept does something to our brains. It hits pleasure centers, right?
Mm-hmm.
It gives us a sense of accomplishment. Might that not enhance the experiential the experience of a narrative, if not experiential narrative?
It's possible, but there are a lot more flaws with it. A person, you know, if those game elements, the hoops that one is made to jump through,
mm-hmm,
get to be tiresome, and they often do.
I'll agree with that.
Then a person can just give up on it and just walk away from it. And how often does that happen in a movie? Very occasionally, but you know, with the movie, you would be getting, for the most part, the same or more story. In a shorter amount of time, you're more likely to experience the whole thing. You're less likely to just sort of abandon whatever the story is, because the game parts, the hoops that you're jumping through, it's like, I'm tired of this. I don't want to do this anymore.
Okay, that's interesting. I really think this comes down to the games we play. I have not run into that. I have not.
You've never bailed on a game?
No, I have. I haven't done it lately because I've become much more protective of my time. So I read a lot more reviews and get a sense of a game. Be like, I'm not going to invest in this for 40 or 50 hours because I like longer games.
Mm-hmm.
Unless I know it's going to be.
And certainly, case in point, Last Guardian for me.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, yeah.
Got burned recently, too.
I know. And it was
an engaging relationship. There was so much hype. There was so much expectation.
Yeah, there was expectations. And it's like, it's a kid with a giant dog,
one of its kind monster thing that's likable.
And like, yeah. Oh my gosh, this sounds great. And then the controls are like, fuck you. I know.
Oh, you want to enjoy this?
You want to enjoy this? Nope. You're going to have to do a bunch of stupid things. It's not going to make any sense.
Oh, you want to jump right? I'm going to make you jump left.
Yeah. And yeah, it crap like that. And yeah, that torpedoes the whole experience.
Okay, so
again, not every game.
No, but you have to generalize. We're generalizing by medium. So yeah, no, you have to. So I'm going to take a step back here because I'm trying to moderate as well. So you've now moved to the logical step of comparing two mediums.
Mm-hmm.
So you're giving a win right off the bat to movies because it is a more encapsulated, kind of guaranteed narrative experience. Is that fair?
Yeah, sure.
Like it's hard to miss the narrative of a movie because it's all there generally in a two-hour period. You don't really have to walk away because there's something wrong with it.
Yeah, it's
in
like
rare instances, maybe.
It's like, you know, we went to see the Alien Covenant, And we didn't, you know, leave halfway through because, oh, I got tired of trying to get the seat right or something. I was trying to get my viewing angle just right.
I couldn't actually see the movie because my seat was facing the wrong way half the time.
And I had to keep turning my seat around. and I know it was part of the experience, but I just got tired of doing it.
It was a rushed product. It was defective. And it wasn't QA'd properly. My seat clearly shouldn't have done that. okay, so that's fair. I very much disagree.
All right.
And I do want to move into movies next. And I understand, and I agree with why you're giving a point to movies.
Mm-hmm.
But I recently have had been very careful and had consistent 3 or 4 back-to-back experiences with near-perfect gaming experiences. To say experiences too many times.
And one might call that cherry-picking, but go on.
Well, are you going to watch bad movies all the time? Just because you went and saw Alien Covenant because your wife
wanted
to.
Sometimes you don't got a choice in the matter. Yeah,
Mel wanted to see it. But I mean, we're really, if you're going to generalize, you might as well pick the best of the medium.
All right.
So,
well, that's an interesting thing to do.
I don't
pick the best of the medium.
Why wouldn't you?
Because it's not representative.
We're talking about the best medium there is.
Mm-hmm.
So wouldn't you want to pick examples that actually showcase the medium strength the most?
All right. Fair enough. Let's go ahead.
It makes for a good counter regardless. Sure. So I would argue that Witcher, Tomb Raider was good. I'm not going to put it in like the upper echelon. But The Witcher 3, I didn't think... I think I said this in a podcast. I don't think any game could be better. And then 2 games later, Horizon Zero Dawn one-upped it. Mm-hmm. Because what it did was it did an open world that was smaller because it's their first open world game. And it's not a bad thing because you can... Grand Theft Auto always comes to mind as being an open world that's too fucking big.
Yeah.
It's just too much shit, and there's no point to it.
Right.
But everywhere I go, there's something that, no matter how trivial, seems to add to the overall understanding of what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And that's huge. Because it's... And Witcher 3 does that to a lesser extent. But I would argue that, as amazing as a good movie can be, you do not invest... in a movie the way you invest in a good video game. And I think the experiential narrative of a game like Horizon Zero Dawn, which again, I'm playing right now, so I'm in the thick of it, and I'm going to give it kudos maybe when I wouldn't a year from now. But that trumps a movie any day of the week to me.
Okay.
Because I could spend 40 hours in this game.
Yeah, and everything that's I do. The flip side, you're spending 40 hours. You're investing more time in it.
But it's rewarding.
It's requiring you to make more of an investment in it.
It's not required. I could have beat this game. I could have beat the game already long ago. But the game is so good that every little extra thing I do adds something.
All right.
Even the pointless collectibles have some kind of interesting facet to the overall narrative. There's these vantage points you find. They're just high places that are hard to get to. That's literally, you could describe them as that, and that explains why you want to get to them.
Okay.
But when you get to them, there's a recording. And someone, right when the world was ending, went around, and he was a drug addict, and he went around to these places and recorded a Paka shitstorm, day 1 through 12. And he was remembering how his life fell apart and what he was looking at the time. And you can see it. You have this technology involved that I'm not getting into, but you can see what he saw at that moment.
Okay.
And it's these things that it's just fetch quests for, like, a trophy. But if you do it, they actually inform... kind of like, that's related to this. Oh, so these throwaway things you don't need to do, but they add to its experiential narrative.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get that in a movie. That's all I'm saying. So movies.
Okay.
Unless you want to counter that.
No, I'm good.
Okay, feel free to cherry pick. I think we need to cherry pick for the sake of trying to make a case for the best
medium.
Okay. Because I already have my medium picked out.
Okay.
And it's not what you think.
So
movies.
So we're going to cherry pick what we think is the best movie in the last 5 to 10 years?
You can do that, or you can cherry pick the best aspects of movies.
All right. Also. Let's check. Let's go for like 1 or 2 movies that are considered the best. Or that we would consider the best.
All right.
I don't know. Help me out here. You've thought about this more.
In terms of narrative, I'm going to... Because I give a pass to investing time in a good narrative.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go with something like Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, okay.
Right? And I know, there's good and bad there, and you're welcome to, you know, pick at that. But something like Lord of the Rings, I think it's very telling that it didn't get an Academy Award or any Academy Awards until the third movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was one giant movie.
Because the payoffs were
at the end
in the last
exactly. Movie. And it was an exceptional narrative from start to finish. It wasn't originally a movie,
mm-hmm.
but you have to give a ton of credit to Peter Jackson for taking very good books that did a lot for the first time and have a very good or very clear place in the history of literature is important.
Okay.
But making them an experience of the cinematic type.
Okay. Now, I'm taking another step back.
Sure.
And saying, you really frame this or you focus this debate on narrative.
Yes.
And
that's me doing that.
I know.
You don't have to do that.
Okay. But that's the gauntlet that you've thrown down in this sure. case. And I would say, and you know this, that in many movies and TV shows and heck, even comics and books and at this point now even video games
mm-hmm.
Narrative is not necessarily the most important component.
Totally fair.
One of our favorite movies of the last 5 years or so was I think Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
And the narrative was complete crap. I mean, there was a narrative.
It was a narrative, yeah.
It was just there. It wasn't that important.
I don't know if it I agree wasn't with that.
That.
I just rewatched it like 2 weeks ago.
All right.
But go on. No, go on.
What made the movie were the characters and the mm-hmm. relationships.
Not the humor?
That came from the characters.
Okay.
That, yes. The humor came directly from the characters and okay. the relationships. And that the characters and the relationships were, I think, the core of the movie. And I think they're the core of most movies. And I mean, if I wouldn't really wanted to get into it, I could maybe even say most books, most comics, most video games, though. That's a tough call. It's tough to put characters because,
well,
and here's why. And I'm just kind of free-forming right
please
now.
Please do.
Because the main character in a video game is you. Even though it's not you, technically.
It depends on the game.
Okay.
Gordon Freeman?
But most of the time,
Gordon
it's
Freeman
you.
Is you.
Gordon
Half-Life
Freeman is you.
Half-Life is a silent protagonist. It's you.
Yes.
Horizon Zero Dawn? Really not you. She is a fully... I get what you're saying, and I actually kind of agree.
Yeah.
But there are definitely degrees to this.
Okay.
Because when I... And I thought about this
but
a lot.
You're the one making the choices. You're the one right. going to other characters. You're the one discovering things.
And more, you're the one deciding how the conversation flows. That's a hallmark of the last couple of generations of games.
Yeah.
But the character still says their words.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Gone are the days where you type in your response and some poor AI... like, tries to come up with a response to you, like the text-driven adventures. Where wasn't I?
AI hey, don't was. Knock those.
Well, I'm just saying, it's a significantly different world. Okay, so, and I'm going to jump big just to counter that. What about Catcher in the Rye?
All right.
Much of that takes place in his head.
Yeah.
That is an important literary, I don't know, piece
yeah,
of
it
history.
Yeah, it takes place in Holden Caulfield's head, but... It is all him. It's all his voice. He's speaking to the reader.
So is the relationship then between the reader and the character?
Because
now you're elevating yeah. like relationships, whereas I'm elevating narrative, which is interesting. It makes sense.
Yeah, I think it is. You know, your relation to Holden really defines how you experience that book. And a lot of people reading are like, I can't stand this guy.
Well, I bet the age you are when you read
sure.
the book is going to go a long way towards that.
Yeah. And if you don't like him, you're not going to like the book.
Unless you're pompous.
Well.
I know this is an important book, so I'm going to like it. But
you know what I mean.
I know what you mean.
If you don't like Holden, if your relation to Holden is not good, it's not a good experience.
It's not an enjoyable read.
Yeah. And of course, if you're like, yeah, I get this guy, you know, I have this, these same sort of angsty
I'm probably less
thoughts.
Than 25 years old, so I totally get Holden Caulfield.
And yeah, the world is a stupid fucked up place.
Yeah.
And yeah, I totally get this, where he's coming from.
People might get it more now at an older age, just given the climate right now, but yeah.
Yeah, sure.
But no, I would agree with that.
Okay.
All I'm saying is, gosh, can I think of movies? I'm not, I'm going to be honest. I'm not in a movie frame of mind lately.
Okay.
You know, I've told you, I go in phases.
Mm-hmm.
Where I'm like, I'm in a book phase, I'm in a movie phase, I'm in a TV show phase, or I'm in a video game phase.
Mm-hmm.
Or a comic book phase. Like, I go in these phases, and I just want to consume one type of media. It's just a thing I've done for decades. And I'm not in a movie phase right now. So I'm trying to think of a good example of... Well,
what are you trying to think of a good example?
Well, like, the narrative is the most important thing, but...
Okay, Dark City. I'll give you that one.
But isn't the relationship still important there?
I mean, doesn't that really inform... But that narrative is so strong.
But
the main character is very much a cipher.
He doesn't have any memories. Yeah, he's like literally a stand-in for you. Yes, but there is a style. There are extremely strong stylistic elements to that movie too.
Yes.
So this is what I will give movies an edge on to games, and I will not give movies many edges on games.
Okay.
Personally, and I know that people would disagree with that, and that's cool. That's why I like this conversation. The more I think about it, the more I like this conversation. But. A movie, because you are passive,
mm-hmm.
you are more passive with a movie than any other medium, including TV, because of the time commitment.
Okay.
I feel.
Okay. And to yeah, go ahead with that.
Because of that.
Well, I mean, because I want to explain what you mean, what I think you mean.
Okay.
Is that in the movie.
Mansplain what I'm saying, Smike.
Yeah, what you're saying is in a movie. It's 90 minutes to 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
You're there, aside from like just pausing so you can hit the bathroom.
There's no interactive element to it.
There's no interactive. There's no choice to like, I want to linger on this moment.
Right.
Or I want to stop and I mean, you could do this. You could pause a movie and like, well, let's talk about this scene.
There was a thing in the late 90s, early 2000s with the different angles. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
It never caught on. It was stupid. Yeah. I never even really did it. But I know that there was like experienced other aspects of the movie, but it was like, no, this is just cutscenes.
There are cutscenes that like the director's like, you want to put this in?
This
sure,
is a bad angle. All right, do whatever the fuck you want. Yes.
But even with a TV show, you can watch an episode and then like decide when to watch the next episode.
Especially now, the way you digest television has altered, and we've talked about this to death. I don't want to get into it.
Yeah.
But the way you digest television is interactive, I would argue. And we'll get into that later. So the thing with the movie is, and the thing that is unique to movies above anything else is it's always a slice of life because it's only up to like maybe 3 hours for a long movie.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And it's consumed in one sitting generally. And it is a movie more than anything is a sum of its parts, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So maybe I agree with you so much as the relationships plus the stylistic choices, definitely the editing.
Yeah.
Plus narrative, and maybe narrative takes a little bit of a back seat there.
I think narrative does.
It's because of the nature of the medium. We have a short period of time to give you a complete experience.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to be entirely passive.
Because if you want, and I'll throw this in.
Yeah.
If you want a movie with a very strong narrative element that kind of blows, look at Dune.
The original Dune.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With you know, Kyle MacLachlan and whoever
else. I think that suffers from the same thing as Assassin's Creed.
And it was, I mean, it's got, you know, massive, monstrous narrative element in it that is rich and deep and complex and interwoven.
Too much for a movie, though.
But yeah, it's like the movie just can't handle it.
The movie bites off more than it can chew.
There's no humor in it, for one thing. Which, I mean, well, I guess it's Dune, so, you know, go figure.
Right,
but all movies suffer if they don't have that element of humor and relatability to them. I think.
No. I would agree. It's occurring to me that
and the character you don't like. Oh man, that one character in Dune was great. I could really relate to him. No, it's not like.
Well, there's always someone who finds some value or something to relate to in anything, no matter how maligned it is. It's just occurring to me that you can probably extend this to any two mediums, the transition of one medium to another. Mediums exist. The original, a book,
mm-hmm.
rarely translates to a movie very well, right? Like, that is a very common complaint.
Rarely, yes.
And there's always an exception. Video games rarely, you know, transition to movies very
mm-hmm.
well, right? And vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
Books to game, like, but it's occurring to me that you could really generalize this pretty easily by saying that whatever a narrative, whatever a medium is in its original form was how it was intended to be.
Mm-hmm.
And translating it is just filled with pitfalls because it's a different medium you're translating it to.
Okay.
And I'm really generalizing.
Yes. You are really generalizing. And to get into another medium now, I'll throw in comic books or graphic novels or whatever you want to call them.
Yeah.
Which I think translate mostly very well to movies and TVs. They can.
They are a transitionary medium.
Yes. Because, part of it is that you look at a comic book and then you look at a storyboard for a movie and you're looking at the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. And Scott McCloud spent a great deal of time and written many books about that subject.
Okay.
I
guess we don't need to talk about it.
No, I mean, have you ever read any Scott McCloud stuff?
The name sounds familiar.
It's his thing, is that the way you experience a comic book,
mm-hmm.
the every aspect of the formatting of it, the flow, the narrative, the weight of the lines, all that, how it translates to a more like movie-like experience. It's very interesting stuff. Very mm-hmm. smart guy. You'd like his books.
Okay.
But anyway.
And yeah, and when if you want to look at it that way, when you're reading a comic, it's like you're reading the blueprints for a movie, or for a TV show.
I'm
a little more than blueprints.
I'm going to jump off of that. I would say that in my mind, comic books are better than movies.
Okay.
Because you get a lot of cinematic elements in a good comic book, but you get the interactive factor as well.
Okay.
You get to it's an experiential narrative versus a passive narrative.
Okay.
Because you are literally going from frame to frame yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And there is that alone, and Scott McCloud talks about this, the way you experience the frames and the flow of the frames is an experience.
Mm-hmm.
It like, and I think I'm saying experience like 100 times now.
That's fine.
But it's work. It's a flow that you're actually consciously doing.
Now, to go a step further and introduce a medium that you haven't brought up.
Oh God, do we have to bring any more in?
Yes, we do. And I'm going to bring in theater. I'm going to bring in stage plays.
Okay.
What is that?
Because that's live. I was trying to exclude live.
Well, too bad.
All right.
Because this tags right off of that. This tags off of what we were just talking about. And me being a theater guy, I read a lot of plays.
Sure.
And when I'm reading a play, and this really just applies to like a very small subset of people. Most people don't do this.
Okay.
Most people don't read plays.
Yeah.
But when I read a play, I'm envisioning the production in my mind. I'm always because I do plays.
Well, if you read a play, like for something like people who are familiar with reading plays, it's hard not to, because there's stage direction and
right.
You know what I mean? I'm not saying that and to take away.
It's hard not to, but most people don't, and most people don't have the experience of working on a play to make that translation of I see what's going on
right
in from this page to what would be happening on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't mean to rhyme that. I'm sorry.
It was it was almost a couplet.
So yeah, and when I do that, I read it and I envision what's happening, and then when I actually go and see the play,
mm-hmm.
it's a very different experience.
Of course,
because you know whoever was working on it had read the same play and had a different vision, and it's hard for me to compare those two. Because when I read it, I have a play going on in my head, but when I see it, it's something completely different.
Which is the book problem, slash benefit. That you don't have a comic book. And this is why I think comic books are a transitionary medium between books and movies.
Right. And I think plays are the same thing. I think a stage play is kind of a transitionary thing between books and a live production.
I just really don't want to get into live stuff.
All right. Well,
I'm not disagreeing with you, but it's such a... Because to me...
Let's move on.
I'll say this. Theater would trump everything. Always. But that's because having been an audience member many times and having been a performer enough times, I am well aware of the energy transference between mm-hmm. the actor and the audience. And there is nothing more interactive or exhausting for both parties than that.
Mm-hmm.
And catharsis... The Greek concept of catharsis exists because it's a real thing. But we're talking about the more, the digital or
and the,
analog.
The Indian concept of rasa.
Is that stealing your soul from a photograph?
No.
No, I know. That's Native American.
R-A-S-A.
I've heard of it, but.
Yeah.
Anyway, rabbit hole. So we kind of skipped by TV.
We did.
So let's go back to TV real quick.
Okay. And of course, the TV show that's coming to my mind is.
DOA?
Yes. You know me so well, Mr. Grassi.
So I have my opinions about TV. Why don't you...
Let's take the OA, because yeah. In my mind, it's one of the most important and engaging and frankly, polarizing
For all the TV all, shows. And all that's related.
Yeah, that has been out in the past however many years.
I just had a text from someone who listened to the OA podcast, finally watched it, and they said, holy crap, 50 minutes in the credits? Because he was an editor.
Oh, yeah. That's that moment I was talking about it, where, like, she starts talking about her growing up in Russia, and then the credits roll, and you're like, oh, my God, what have
this
I gotten myself
this
into?
This is a giant movie. Oh, shit. Because how else do you interpret that? I mean, that was my initial thought.
Yeah. So where are we going with that?
No, keep going.
What?
So to me, TV trumps movies.
Okay.
Because I find, as I already said, TV,
you've got more time.
You're more investment, more control, more interactive element of how do I want to binge on this? As long as there have been VHS tapes or Laserdisc, I don't know, did they do TV on Laserdisc? I don't feel like they did.
Maybe. I don't know.
Betamax and VHS.
Well, I mean, the thing is the depth and length of the story is obviously can be much greater on
nowadays. TV. We're in a golden age of television. Not that long ago, TV was largely shit.
TV,
I mean, in terms
was
of narrative,
episodic.
In terms of weak narrative.
All right.
Don't make me bust out. Everything bad is good for you.
All right. So what are you taking this back to? Like Lost?
No. Like I'll do what Everything Bad is Good with You did. Like NYPD Blue and Hill Street Blues. Like you can start to map the narrative elements and the complexity of the plot.
Yeah. Hill Street Blues was like the first time
and he holds
when things
that
started
up,
getting
yeah.
complex.
And so from then on, how about that?
When it wasn't just like a procedural that was...
Right, the law and order.
Just swapping the names and crimes out in every episode.
Right, and the lines are just the monkeys at a typewriter.
Yeah.
But again, we're cherry picking. So, so yes, so things like the OA, things like Stranger Things, which you could argue is sugary pop, but...
A little bit.
It's
not as challenging as the OA, and that's why I'm taking the OA as...
Right.
As my example.
But these are you have to take the human, the reaction element.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the cream rises, right? It's rare that some truly awful shit gets lauded as the best thing since the last best thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And I find it very interesting that both those things were pretty close to one another and ended up getting compared, which is very unfair to both.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a silly
It's
comparison.
Just a stupid thing that people do, right? it is. TV is an art form, and there's something I'm going to bust out later about this, but TV as a medium, I should say, has a far stronger narrative ability.
It can.
Yeah.
And that can go both ways. It gives the writer, the producer, the director,
the actors,
more freedom and more space to tell a more complex, a more rich story. If that's what they want to do,
right?
If they're looking that far ahead. And saying, okay, we're going to map out something that goes from point A to point Z.
Like DOA.
Yeah, like DOA.
Because she said, I'm quoting Britt Marlin from a New York Magazine article, the OA's plot is a labyrinth and you've only seen the outermost part. So they have plotted this shit out.
And I hope so.
And
the Duffer
Brothers had a 60-page treatise just on the monster in Stranger Things. They know what is going on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that kind of shit, and we all know, because I've said it, that lights up my brain like nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But I'm sorry, go on.
And I might look at something like Lost, where, you know, it's arguable that, like, they had the first season kind of mapped out, and then after
they were winging
like,
it. Battlestar.
Battlestar Galactica,
they were winging it, you know? It's still,
yeah.
They hit enough things that it was engaging,
mm-hmm.
but when you binged it, which I didn't, I watched it in real time. When you binged it, those flaws became far more apparent. We have very different viewing experiences of it. Now I'm afraid to open the Blu-ray. Because it's like, well, shit, I remember it being really good because I had a week and then different seasons to forget the flaws, mm-hmm. you know? So I was like looking forward to getting the next installment, which is another advantage of TV. You can stumble in the first season or two, Buffy, and still end up being a really strong show because the human brain forgets and forgives in a week or 3 months. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, you don't get that with movies. I don't think anyone should make a video game movie. I think they should make video game TV shows.
Oh, that's your bold statement of the night.
Well, think about it. Assassin's Creed. Well, so first of all, I'm going to go back to my original statement in that video games, the modern video game should not be a movie at all. It should stay a video game.
Okay.
Horizon Zero Dawn does not need to be anything else. It is a cinematic masterpiece.
Mm-hmm.
It would suck as a movie. It would suck as a TV show. It is exactly what it needs to be.
So it would suck as a TV show. Why?
Because it's interactive element. The way they dole out the explorations has already been done. All you're doing is trying to capture something that's already been done well. There's a sentiment now that I agree with. You shouldn't remake good movies. You should remake bad movies.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah. I think Roger Ebert was the one.
Is that where that first came from?
Who said that, yeah.
Look at Judge Dredd. Judge Dredd's a great example. Judge Dredd from the 90s is a stupid fucking movie.
The Stallone movie.
The Stallone one. I am law. Judge Dredd from the 2010s is really good movie. I mean, it's The Raid.
Yeah.
But it's a really good movie and enjoyable. For what it is, mm-hmm. it's pretty much what you would want. And that makes sense to me. But why take something that was interactive, doled out, critically acclaimed, and then try to remake it as a movie?
Well, we know the answer to that.
Money.
It's money.
Right.
Yeah.
Wider audience. And I get that. But right. we're talking purely from the standpoint of mediums.
Mm-hmm.
You should not take a modern narrative-based video game and try to make it. The Witcher TV show seems stupid to me. I'm actually not that excited about it.
I didn't even realize there was going to be a Witcher TV show.
Everyone pinged me. I had like 5 pings on it in one day when they announced it. It's unnecessary. The books were not as good as the games. Having read almost all the books. But the games don't recreate the books. They take the story past where it ended, which is very smart.
Mm-hmm.
So they took something that had a really good foundation and said, let's fan service this, but do that in a way that we don't normally do. Like, do it well.
Mm-hmm.
And it became its own thing, and it's great. But yeah, Horizon Zero Dawn, Uncharted. Uncharted's fantastic as a narrative. Why are they making a movie? Prince of Persia didn't have a strong narrative, but it was a terrible movie. Like, these things, they don't need to be anything other than what they are.
To go back to comic books for a second, mm-hmm. The one that is coming back to my mind right now for whatever reason is The Boys.
Okay.
I think that would make a terrible movie.
Yeah.
Because I don't think, you know, you can't have the time to get into why everything is the way it is, to have the introductions to everything within 90 minutes to 2 hours.
Let's even distill it down more. The gore, of which there is a significant amount,
yeah,
is natural and organic in the comic form. Because...
But still pretty jarring.
because it doesn't distract.
It's awful.
It's awful, but you can move past it. Seeing that imagery in a movie would be very hard to get past. Mm. They would have to tone it down, and then you've lost the feeling of the boys. Mm. So that... Like, that buffer of not having it be a photograph or a photorealistic image, mm-hmm. like it does service to it in an experiential nature, is what I'm saying. I don't know if that's true or not. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
Like, you can watch someone. I mean, come on. First comic, the character based on Simon Pegg's holding his girlfriend's hands. He's so happy. Speed guy comes by and just destroys her, and he's just holding her hands.
Yeah.
I mean, this is like panel one, page one.
Yeah.
And it's like, I mean, that's so horrible, but then it, like, they move right past it, right? And he's damaged by it, and they go back to it, yeah. But it's just,
it's like horrible, but kind of funny
at the same time, because that's the nature of the boys. But the point is, I don't think you can move past it that easily in a movie, because it's realistic looking instead of a comic book.
Yeah, you'd have to make it campier in a movie.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. The minute you go there, you're losing the feeling. You're mm-hmm. losing the spirit of the narrative. So, all right.
I agree with that.
We kind of touched on everything but books.
Yes.
So, we're going to run long, and that's fine.
All right.
But I want to talk about books a bit before I get to our closing arguments on our favorite preferred medium.
I mean, I... I don't read enough books. I'll admit to that.
Okay. Yeah, you're not a big reader, are you? You're an article reader. But you're not.
Yeah, I read lots of articles.
You're a nonfiction guy.
Yeah, which is sad. But I you know, I used to read a lot more. Mm-hmm. And
well, you read plays and you read art. I mean, you know, you read.
Yeah, but it's not the same thing.
True.
And reading a play is. It's much more visual and right. and audio focused, but it's hard to explain.
No, well, I understand what you're saying, but
because I'm picturing very specific things, and it's telling you what to picture. I think reading a play does not leave as much to the imagination.
Reading a play makes you the director. Reading a book makes you the main character.
Yeah,
if you want to generalize. So reading a book. So what you remember from the golden days of when you used to read books?
Man, the stories are, I mean, the stories are still with me that I read 20, 30 plus years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Like strongly with me. And I don't feel like I have the same connection with like the books that I remember the most. With any other medium
mm-hmm.
that I've experienced. I mean, yeah, I've got some favorite movies, but I don't remember them now like I remember the books.
Let me ask you this, just to explore that more. Desert Island scenario.
Mm-hmm.
You can have one book or one movie or one comic book. You can have one thing and the means of experiencing it. What do you choose? Because it sounds like you're saying a book.
I think I'd have to choose a book.
Because you can read a book over and over again.
Yeah.
Watching a movie over and over again gets old.
Over and over again.
I have too.
I
read Jurassic Park 4 times back to back.
Yeah. And you can't, I mean, you can't beat that because it's purely your imagination.
Mm.
And I mean, I don't know what else to say to that. I'm just thinking back. I'm remembering what the most powerful stories for me are from books. Period.
Because they're utterly personal.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Books can transport you. The way you experience a book, since it's all about experiential stuff, the way you experience a book is personal on a level that nothing else is. Not even comic books, because
right,
there's a visual element, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you remove any visual aspects from a narrative, makes it more personal, in my opinion.
Okay.
And
I'll
so
buy that.
That's what makes the book so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I don't even like reading a book on a tablet. I've done it, but there's something about it that cheapens the effect.
Hmm.
Because my mind expects to be spoon-fed images when I'm on a tablet.
Hmm.
There's,
okay.
there's a contextual issue there. It's like, tablet, for me, I mean, if I had a Kindle for years, it might not be the same problem. But for me, a tablet means a game or a video or a movie.
And let me just take a book that I know we both read.
Sure.
And I know we both seen the movie. And I know how we both feel about it.
Okay.
Because John dies at the end.
Yeah.
And that book was a tremendous experience.
From start to finish.
The movie was like an hour and a half of moderately interesting entertainment.
Well, like, it tried to stay on point the first half, and then it just fucking gave up. Kind of story can't be contained in pretty much any visual medium.
No.
It's too visual. You know what I mean? It's too imaginative and too vibrant to be contained by something where you actually have to be held accountable for creating that image somehow mm-hmm. with a practical or digital effect.
So I just thinking back, like, what movie have you seen that is, or TV show or even video game that you remember with such a vivid sense of, in all senses, as John dies at the end?
See, that's funny. That's tough because that's like a Gonzo story.
Well, that's my point, though.
Well, if you want to...
We're cherry-picking some of the...
Right, no, that's a good way to do it. So if you want to go Gonzo, you look at something like Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, right?
Right.
Not comparable.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the visceral reaction between reading John
Dyson. In terms of games, I would throw like the Stanley Parable, which was certainly a cool experience, but it doesn't, you know.
There's no comparison.
There's no comparison.
And it's more for you than for me. There's even less of a comparison me. Because I wasn't like, oh my God, it's the best game ever. Like you.
I wasn't.
That's how you sounded. It was like your favorite game. I asked you what your favorite game was, and you said the Stanley Parable.
All right. It was. But that's how fleeting it is. It may have been my favorite game for like a couple months.
That's funny.
That's the nature of the medium.
That's true.
Fleeting.
So, all right. We've talked about all the mediums. All
right.
What, in your mind, is the best medium?
I have to go with books, even though I don't read enough. I've convinced myself that I need to go and read more books now.
If that's what this podcast accomplished, if one person goes out and reads one extra book, this podcast, all 66 episodes have been fucking worth it, man. All
right. So yeah, that's where I'm laying my money.
Man, I think you've changed my mind.
Whoa!
I was going to say television.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go with that. I'm starting to wonder if, because I'm thinking back to my experiences with books, even up to recently, and it's a tough thing to top.
Mm-hmm.
That visceral reaction.
Yeah.
The reason I was going to say TV and not video games, which I assume you thought I would say, but the TV, the experience I'm having with TV lately, the OA, Breaking Bad, The Wire, like in the last like 5 or 10 years, like TV, it's just been blowing my mind. But TV has become this perfect amalgamation of the passive experience and the caveman storyteller. Like, to me, the ultimate narrative experience is the person in front of a fire telling a story. And that is, animal brain goes back to tribal history. That's how we pass down our history.
Okay.
For a very long time.
Until we figured out books.
Books.
And we're like, this is way better.
But it's not. I would say it's not.
In a sense,
I think you can pack more in, but yeah. But have you ever like experienced a really good storyteller? I'm not saying like a friend who tells a good story.
I know what you're talking about.
You know, yeah. And it goes into live theater,
mm-hmm.
because it's, again, it's energy transference and it's manipulation, yes. of the good kind, and it's engagement. And it's all those kind of things. Again, I'm kind of leaning towards, man, maybe it is books, but for me, what TV has become lately is,
well, okay, if I'm stranded on a desert island and I can have a book, movie, TV, video game, or a live theater troupe. I think I would go with live
but
theater
troupe. But that's why that is literally the reason I remove live elements from it, because then you're kind of breaking the desert island scenario. Yeah. I'm not the only one here. There is a theater troupe. And when they leave, I'm fucking going with them.
Yep. They're on tour.
It's Gilligan's Island. It's a 3-hour tour.
No.
Self 5.
Nope.
But the thing about TV, so the point I'm trying to make is that what I've been experiencing lately is TV has made the passive movie experience better in that it stretches it out. It gives a narrative time to grow, to breathe, to explore things, to take these moments that may not be serving the plot entirely, but they give it a sense of realism or just, you know, organic existence.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you watch something like The OA, like, it is engaging from start to finish.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't spoon feed you anything.
No. And there are times on like a lot of things, certainly like unlike a lot of movies, where there are just scenes with characters in them, and it's just the characters being like breathing, as people like to say.
Yeah.
That's
why I thought Force Awakens was, there was no one breathed. No one took that moment.
Yeah.
You know, that it's a lost thing. You don't see it as much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So I came into this discussion.
And I don't think a lot of people don't really appreciate it. Those moments, a lot of people,
I think,
watch,
we've lost
it,
that sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of people like watch some of those scenes in the air, like, why this scene didn't go anywhere. Why am I watching this?
Right. Everything.
What's the point of this scene?
I'm educated enough about celluloid mediums. Not that they use celluloid anymore, but I'm educated enough to know that like everything should be serving a purpose. So if it's not,
yes,
I'm bored.
It's
by
the
this.
Conservation of screen time.
Right, exactly. Because you're serving the master of time.
Yeah.
And TV can get away nowadays with doing that far less than a movie can. Hmm. But I feel breathless watching a lot of movies now. Like, it's a weird thing as I'm getting older. I'm like, just slow down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I get where you're going because most movies are still not that smart and I figure them out by the trailer. So mm-hmm. it's like, I know where you're going. Just take a breath, man. Don't rush there because you're not actually as smart as you think you are. But TV is doing a better job being like, yeah, you're not going to guess where I'm going,
mm-hmm.
which makes it more engaging. So I came into this discussion prepared to say that TV is the closest thing to the old-timey storyteller.
Mm-hmm.
And that they can stretch out across three nights and you are riveted the whole time. But I'm not sure I agree with that anymore because, God damn it, I also can't think of a more visceral experience than reading a good book.
Right.
So I guess in the end, I'm still going to go with books.
All right.
So we keep getting
book
further.
Book five.
high book. So in the end, we came up with the perfect medium X number of thousands of years ago when with the first written word.
Yeah.
Beowulf.
Yep.
And it's been downhill ever since.
Yeah. You know what we screwed up?
What?
We should have rigged this so a podcast would win.
Fuck! Well, I mean, they do, because it's the closest thing. That is the closest thing to listening to a storyteller. There's no visual elements, Mike. It's all imaginative. It's interactive. People scream at this podcast because we annoy them. That's interactive, right? Someone's probably screaming right now. Damn it, I hadn't thought of that.
With that, we are buddies in space.
You are.
That's Michael Smith, and you are.
And Michael Carassi. Cue the pre-recorded production note.
Buddies in Space is a Stolen Dress Entertainment production. Visit stolendress.com to check out other Stolen Dress podcasts, blogs, tweets, videos, and books.
Yeah.
Nice. I didn't get to talk about Alien Covenant, so I'll save that for next time.
Okay. We'll lead it with that.
Yeah. It was better than the last one. Spoiler.
It couldn't be worse. I know it couldn't be worse. No way.